Judith Smeltzer, and this is Ballot 2010, an intersection special. The Florida primary is just 2 weeks away, and Orange County has two big races on the ballot. Voters will be choosing a new county mayor and filling the newly created role of school board chair. For the next 2 weeks on Intersection, the candidates from those races will debate the issues and answer your questions. We'll highlight the race for school board chair next week, but today we're joined by the candidates for Orange County mayor, and we'll hear from them next. Welcome to Ballot 2010, an Intersection special. Orange County Mayor Rich Crotty is leaving the office he's held since 2001. He can't run for re-election because of term limits. His replacement will be stepping into one of the most important political positions in Central Florida. The new mayor will lead a county with more than a million residents. He or she will be in charge of more than 7,000 county staffers and an annual budget that tops $2.5 billion. The primary is August 24th. It's a nonpartisan race, so all the county's registered voters can take part. If no one gets more than 50% of the vote, the top two candidates will square off in a November runoff. Three of the main candidates for the mayor's job are with us today: businessman Matthew Falconer, former County Commissioner Teresa Jacobs, and current County Commissioner Bill Siegel. Current County Commissioner Linda Stewart was invited but was unable to join us. There are also two write-in candidates for the race. You can find their details and links to all the candidates' websites on our website, wmfe.org/ballot. Well, thank you all so much for being here today, and I want to jump right into some questions. Let's talk first about what's on a lot of people's minds, the economy and jobs. The new mayor will be inheriting a tough economy, the unemployment rate in the double digits. I'd like to know what each of you would do to stimulate the economy and create new jobs. And Matthew, we'll start with you.
Okay, thank you for having me. I have a five-point plan known as my Orange County Economic Recovery Plan that will allow small business to prosper and hire back our unemployed workforce. My plan includes lowering taxes by reducing waste in government, rolling back impact fees to encourage investment in our communities, and a tax holiday so investors will buy up our housing stock and put small contractors back to work. Unemployment has increased 300% during the term of my opponents, and I understand how small business works, and I will get people back to work.
Bill Siegel?
Thank you, Judith. Thanks for having me. I heard on Marketplace this morning that, again, that the economy looks like it may be headed for a double dip, but one doesn't know. Orange County will fare no better or no worse than the rest of the country unless we have a mayor that is focused on putting people to work. To me, the next mayor's first job will be raising employment and keeping bringing in great employment from outside of this area and keeping the employment we have here in good stead and making sure that it is easy to do business in this community. I have a 27-point plan, detailed plan out that has been promulgated and is available on my website. Among other things, I want to keep the county building open late at night so that small businesses can participate and get permits and such. I will offer people a $3,000 rebate if they are able to keep and create a good job at 150% of the median income and keep them on for a year. A lot of things are focused on large business. I would like to help focus on small existing business.
Okay, Teresa Jacobs?
Thank you. One of the problems that we have in Central Florida is that we have an economy that has been so heavily dependent upon development and construction. Our economy is based on tourism, which is a stable and sustainable part of our economy, as well as agriculture and growth and construction. So when we saw the collapse, if you will, in the housing market, we took a greater beating than some other communities because of that. We've worked hard in Orange County in the 8 years that I was in office to diversify our economy, and we're on the right track, but we need to do more in that regard. And some of the areas that we're looking at, obviously, we've got a medical city that is really taking off on the east side. Computer simulation is an exciting potential for us as we continue to grow in that area. But we also need to look for other economies that we can thrive at rather than just constantly trying to compete with other regions across the country. Look for those areas that we're best suited to provide some leadership and an economic engine. And I look to the issue of energy and the environment as two areas that not only do we have problems, but we also have an opportunity to be an economic leader in those areas.
One of the things that there's been a lot of debate about is the use of incentives to bring companies into the area. So I'm wondering what your philosophies are on the best way to use county tax dollars to provide incentives for companies that want to locate here. And as an example, let's talk about Burnham. Tell me whether you think the $300 million for the Burnham Institute was money well spent, and how does that illustrate your position on using incentive dollars? And Bill Siegel, we'll start with you this time.
Thanks, Judith. Getting Burnham here was vital to starting that biomedical cluster, so I supported bringing Burnham here. Incentives, we speak about this at all the debates. I don't like incentives, but we cannot tie one hand behind our back and unilaterally disarm. I believe in using incentives along with some of our other assets, our great airport, our university, et cetera. The other part of bringing new jobs here is having a knowledgeable manager, someone who understands business. 2 or 3 years ago, there was a company coming here. Everybody was trying to promote them. The Orlando Sentinel said, we should give them a $30 million incentive. I did some research. I talked to the business editor at the Toledo Blade. I found out that they were no more of a great company than hundreds of others, and that they were just coming here primarily for the incentives. So you have to be discerning when you give out those incentives.
Teresa Jacobs?
I agree largely with what Commissioner Siegel just said. Philosophically, I would like for the federal government to ban using tax incentives as a way to lure businesses. I think that we are far better off if we use our tax incentives to create a quality of life that encourages people to want to move and work here. If you want to talk about where do you want to work, you want to work where you want to live. And that's where I'd like to see us put our tax dollars. Having said that, I also agree that in certain very critical areas that we need to be able to compete. As long as other regions can use tax incentives, then I want to be able to compete on a fair and level playing field. But you've got to use them very judiciously. One of the issues, and there are things that the candidates are going to agree on, there's things we're going to disagree on. Mr. Falconer has a plan to give a 2-year tax holiday to snowbirds and landlords, give them free property taxes for the first 2 years. I'm real concerned about that. That's a major tax incentive, and those tax dollars don't fall from heaven. They come out of the pocketbooks of citizens. So we're taking tax dollars from citizens that are here, and we're giving them to people that are moving down from the north. I have concern because I don't think that's a good use of tax dollars. And two, those folks that are moving here just because they got a discount on property taxes for 2 years may up and move as soon as that runs out. So I don't support that. Commissioner Siegel's got a tax incentive plan that gives $3,000 to anybody who hires an employee at $58,000. Now, I personally think that as a business owner, I would not hire somebody for $58,000 because I'm going to make $3,000, get a $3,000 tax rebate. Again, that comes out of the public services that we can provide and the pocketbooks of our taxpayers. And I don't think it's going to work. I think we're just going to be giving away $3,000 for jobs that would have been there otherwise.
Matthew Falconer.
Well, great. I think there's three comments there now that Teresa put on the table there. But I'm going to address that first one where she criticized my tax holiday plan. The reason Florida's economy is so depressed is because people are voting with their feet. Second homeowners and snowbirds are leaving Florida because they're paying sometimes 4 times as much in real estate taxes as homestead property owners. My tax holiday plan will bring $300 million in new investment in Orange County, stimulate our housing market, put small contractors back to work, and bring up property values, which will help fund our schools and public safety. But as regards to Burnham, I'm strongly against corporate welfare programs. Taxing small business and giving the money to politically connected big business is corporate welfare, and it puts people out of work. Really, what we need to focus on is the prime economic driver in our state. There are 1 million small businesses in Florida, and if each one hired just one person, unemployment would go to zero. So we can't be putting more pressure on the backs of small business. We can't be taxing consumers out of all their disposable income. We have to have a sound free market economy. And these corporate welfare programs that have been in place for the past 8 years with all my opponents are part of the reason for the depth of our recession.
Bill Siegel, would you like 30 seconds to respond to the charge about your specific point?
Certainly, be happy to. We don't expect that everybody is going to participate in this, and we will watch it very judiciously for those that do. It is a gesture to try and get some of the smaller businesses to hire people. Don't know if everybody will use them. There'll be 1,000 slots available, so to speak. But it shows small business that we do care, and we will try and reward them in some small manner to get prime the pump to get business going again.
All right, let's move to development, a somewhat related issue to obviously the economy. Back in June, the commission narrowly defeated a proposal to build more than 6,000 new homes in Southeast Orlando, the Innovation Way East project. Bill Siegel, I know you voted for that project. Linda Stewart, another candidate who's not here today, voted against the project. So I'm going to ask Bill, you to explain your vote, and Teresa Jacobs and Matthew Falconer to tell us how you would have voted if you all had been on the commission. And if you could use that to sort of talk about your broader philosophy about growth and development in the county. And Teresa Jacobs, we'll start with you this time.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. I would have voted against it as it was put out. In 2006, I actually voted for the Innovation Way corridor. I think that made good sense. There was one particular area that I did not support in 2006, and that was what I refer to as the Turkey Creek tributary. It was the area between Turkey Creek and the Econ. And that was the area that became the source of, I think, the most controversy in back in June. And that's where your split vote came down, because you had half the commission members who said, we don't want to see development in that corridor. In 2006, I asked to have that corridor, that small area, taken out of the development blueprint. And in 2010, I saw, obviously, a lot of support for that. I wish we'd had that in 2006, because I think that it misled the property owners at the time to give them the green light that at some point in the future that would make sense. And they argued that. They said, hey, 2006, you guys voted for this. Now you're telling us it doesn't make sense. So I think it's very important, big role of government. We have several key things that we do. We provide public safety. That's our first and foremost important goal. But we also have a major role to play in planning for where development occurs and making sure that the infrastructure is in place to serve it and the environment's protected. And if you've followed my voting record on Orange County Commission, that's where I come down. I'm not pro-growth. I'm pro-growth. I'm not anti-growth. I'm for the right growth in the right place that provides the infrastructure to preserve our quality of life and make sure that we still have good schools, good roads, good transportation, all the elements that make this a great place to live and work.
Matthew Falconer.
Well, thank you. I am very pro-business, but I actually came out against the IWE project because the residential density was too great for that rural area. I believe that as we get away from the urban core, the residential densities must decrease. Otherwise, we put demands on roads and schools and services out there that we cannot support. Really, we need to have a very practical and pragmatic thing. We can't be anti-growth. We can't be all the above in terms of growth. We need to be practical and pragmatic, because really what the decision in growth planning is the quality of life for the citizens, not only the citizens that are coming in, but the citizens that live in those areas. So I think we need to be pragmatic about it, and I think they tried to put too much residential density into that rural area.
Bill Siegel, you voted for this project. Tell us why.
Well, let me first say that one of the things that Commissioner Jacobs and I always agreed on during our term was it is so difficult sometimes in a short time to explain very complex problems.
Understood.
Yes. We worked on Innovation Way for 4 years, this county. We decided we wanted this high-tech corridor from UCF to the airport. We had tons of hearings. There was more planning in this than there was in the old Soviet Union. We had a jobs home linkage. We had a multimodal element. We had a land stewardship plan. When it came to Innovation Way East, there was a proposal by these folks to put a $50 million interchange in, which would have put 800 people to work for a year, $12 million in economic incentives to get ICP going as a new research park affiliated with UCF, a $4 million incubator. Every member of that commission, and let me remind Commissioner Stewart, who sometimes doesn't remember, voted for 6,500 homes. The difference came down to where, as Commissioner Jacobs said, where those homes would have gone, 400 of those homes. My druthers would have not to have put them where the applicant wanted them. But it was a compromise, because life is a two-way street, and we have to compromise and make adjustments. The closest, everything there is west of the Econ. The closest homes would have been 0.2 miles from the Econ, most of them 0.6 miles. I thought it was a good compromise to make. It didn't pass. We don't have Innovation Way. The Sentinel now refers to it as the land formerly known as Innovation Way. It may be 2 years, it'll come back. But again, I thought it was the right compromise to make, and we'll stand by that.
You're listening to Ballot 2010, an intersection special on 90.7 WMFE. I'm Judith Smeltzer, and we're talking with the candidates for Orange County Mayor. You can join the conversation at the Florida Talks blog, and while you're there, you can see what public radio listeners around the state are talking about. There's a link to the blog on our website, WMFE.org/intersection. Well, let's move on to the topic of public transportation, and certainly it's something I know you all have debated a lot, but tell our listeners, obviously, SunRail, the commuter rail system, is something that is expected to change the landscape here in Orange County and all across Central Florida over the next several years. The new mayor could be responsible for paying to operate that system when the cost is eventually turned over to the county. So, Matthew Falconer, we'll start with you, and how will you deal with this?
Well, I think that the way to provide for public transportation in Orange County is to bring Lynx into the 21st century. Right now, Lynx works on a hub-and-spoke system where basically the buses run up and down the major arteries, and it doesn't take people from where they live to where they work. It's a very inefficient system. I would like to take Lynx into the 21st century by taking all the addresses of where people live and where they work and putting it into a computer, creating an algorithm that will create routes that satisfy customer demand. We shouldn't have 66-passenger buses. We should have a series of different size buses that include the big buses but also 15-passenger small buses and use jitneys. I believe we need a combination of the public busing system and private sector to get people where they want to work. I don't think that rail systems are effective in Florida because we don't have the geographic density like other places do in the country. We are a 360-degree route, and SunRail is just going one basically north-south. So that's only going to serve 0.1% of our population. For us to have adequate public transportation, Lynx has to go in the 21st century, and that's going to be my focus.
Okay, Bill Siegel?
Interestingly enough, Mr. Falconer and I have a great deal of common ground on Lynx. I spoke with the executive director, the interim executive director, on Monday, gave him my thoughts. Many of those were what Mr. Falconer said, jitneys, smaller buses, eliminating the hub and spoke. And the executive director actually said there's some times when you can send a cab out for people instead of sending a bus, and you can use the algorithms and you can have some predictability as to the needs and during the times of the day for public transportation. I, unlike Mr. Falconer, I'm a big supporter of SunRail. I think it's going to change the face of Orange County. I think it's going to be a wonderful way to start a major public transportation system in Central Florida. Inherent in the SunRail funding is some Lynx money for some feeder routes. So big supporter of SunRail. High-speed rail is going to be an interesting proposition, but that was not our decision. That was a federal decision.
Teresa Jacobs, why don't you address Lynx as well, since the gentlemen have to.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. You know, one of the things that I think is important is to give credit where it's due. Lynx has already started, and Commissioner Siegel was just alluding to that, I think, in his comments, that Lynx is already going in that direction. They recognize the need to get away from the large buses that are going, you know, all going to basically the downtown core. That's not the most efficient way. And I applaud them for the direction that they're taking. And there's also it's called a commuter assistance program that's available that's very, very few people know about. Your station, I think, would be a wonderful advocate for getting the word out for how people can use private sector. You know, if I don't want to drive by myself, how can I find somebody that I can carpool with? Because maybe sometimes I want to drive, I need to drive. Sometimes I got a doctor's appointment, but sometimes it would be more cost effective to carpool, and I can work while I'm driving. And so I see our community and our culture evolving. A few years ago, there was a great resistance to transit, and more we're beginning to realize that this has to be a part of our transportation makeup. It doesn't mean we all have to use commuter rail. I do support commuter rail. I think it was the right first step. Part of our role, we talked about it a few minutes ago, is to plan for the future. In some regards, it's an insurance policy. If we see $5 or $10 gallon of gas, if we have a Middle Eastern crisis, that's not unreasonable, and we're going to be darn glad we have some options. As our population ages, we want them to have options. Everybody should not be dependent upon a car. It ought to be an option, but we need other options as well. As far as the idea of the operating costs, they're really pretty minor compared to our total budget, can be easily absorbed in a well-run budget, and we're talking about 2020. I'd also applaud DOT. They have not taken the cost of building it and you know, the capital cost, and turned it into long-term operating costs. And that's going to help keep our operating costs down. So we can handle this. And it's the right first step.
Well, this brings me to a question from one of our partners in Ballot 2010, the Orange County League of Women Voters. They wanted to know whether you would support a dedicated funding source for public transit and what that source would be. Bill Siegel, we'll start with you.
First of all, I will not, in this economic environment, support any new taxes, even the rental car surcharge, which I think in its time is a good funding source. I will not support raising gas taxes. I do believe that a well-run county, and one of the things that I like to see is we have the same headcount in 2010 as we did in 2000. I want to make sure that it's the same headcount at the county in 2020, with the exception of public safety. I think as our ad valorem tax base comes back and grows again, if we resist as community leaders, county leaders, to curb the urge to add new programs constantly, add headcount, that we will have enough money to adequately fund Lynx and our share of SunRail.
So no dedicated funding source.
I don't see a need presently.
Okay. Teresa?
You know, I've been very misunderstood on this issue. So let's talk for a minute about what dedicated means. For some, I think dedicated may be code word for higher tax or new tax. And dedicated does not, in and of itself, mean higher tax or new tax. What I hear when I hear the word dedicated is a reliable source that Lynx has that they know that's their source of funding. What I have proposed is that we take a fraction of our existing mill, not raise taxes, not shift taxes, take a fraction of the existing millage that we already take, that we already collect, the fraction that is equal to what we already spend on Lynx. Right now we're spending about $32 million subsidizing Lynx, and we have been, actually that's down from where we were in the past. Three counties in the region help fund Lynx, and so does the city of Orlando. Turn that into an equivalent millage, which is about, I believe, about a third of a mill, and promise Lynx that at least for the next 5 years, that's what you have, so that you don't have to come in every year and wonder, is Orange County going to cut the funding, increase the funding? It's not a negotiated process. It gives them a reliable, stable source of funding. Now, if property values increase and that millage generates more, they'll get a little more. Property values continue to decline, they'll get a little less. They'll be in the same boat that Orange County government is in, but they won't be coming hat in hand every year. So that's my dedicated source of funding. It's not new. It's not higher. It's not a shift. It doesn't take away from the funding that we already have for other public services and public safety. And the other thing that I have said that I would support, though, is the rental car surtax. And I would see the majority of that going to fund transit.
Okay, Matthew Falconer.
Well, I've heard that SunRail is not going to lose that much money, but I've done extensive research over 2 years in this project, and TriRail in Miami, which is already paid for, loses $87 million a year. And based on my research of comparable systems, I think that SunRail is going to lose $100 million a year and force cuts to public safety and education. That is why I propose that we take the $534 million that's in the bank in Tallahassee and shift that money towards education so we don't lay off teachers next year. We have a $7 billion budget deficit next year in the state of Florida, and we might lay off as many as 10,000 teachers, 1,600 of them in Orange County here alone. So I think it's a time for priorities. I think we need to put education, public safety, and social services over capital projects. We're at the worst economy in three generations here. We need to get our priorities straight, and I just don't think that we can either raise taxes or cut education and public safety, because that's what the public wants.
We're going to go to the budget specifically in just a moment, but while we're on transit, I want to talk briefly about the Expressway Authority, because obviously the Orange County mayor sits on the board of the Expressway Authority, so whichever one of you candidates or another candidate that might not be here wins will be on that board. And so obviously last year the agency raised tolls by a quarter, future increases planned every 5 years starting in 2012. So I'd like to know, first of all, whether you would have voted for that increase and why, and obviously there's been a lot of controversy surrounding the workings of the Expressway Authority. A grand jury report just last year described a culture of corruption at the agency. So, wondering if any of you would propose reforms and what kind of reforms. So, Teresa Jacobs, we'll start with you.
Great, thank you. No, I would not have supported the 25-cent increase across the board. I think that the Expressway Authority first has to get its house in order, and it has to earn back the trust of the taxpayers and the toll payers, and they have not done an adequate job of doing that. They've made some, in my opinion, some financial decisions that are not justified. In addition, you talked, and this is not a new political position. In 2004, I called for an audit, an outside audit of the expressway. It took me about a year to get them to open up their books to the comptroller, and I called for an overhaul of the Expressway Authority Board to make it more accountable to the citizens. In terms of some of the things I would want, I would champion for them to do differently. They do almost all of their bond issues, and all their funding comes through bond issues. They bond the tolls that they'll get in the future. They are all negotiated bond deals. There's a lot of questions in this community and across the nation over negotiated bond deals. Orange County switched about 15 years ago to doing competitive bond issues so that you know you're getting the lowest rate. I would go to competitive bond issues. It's not just more cost-effective, but it also takes out some of the, you know, questionable insider dealing, that culture of corruption we've been hearing about. I would also do everything I could to hold them to the same ethical standards that I championed in Orange County beginning in 2006. We want to know who your business partners are, and we want to know that you don't have conflicts of interest. And that's extremely important on the Expressway Authority Board. Open, transparent, and accountability is crucial. Now, they've got a couple of big projects that are really important that I totally support. We need to complete the Parkway.
Wakiva Parkway.
The Wakiva Parkway. Absolutely a high priority for all of us here in Orange County. Done a lot has gone into coming up with an environmentally sensitive parkway. But I also believe, and this is one of the few areas I think that Mr. Falcon and I agree on, I don't think that should be borne totally on the backs of the local toll payers, most of them that are held hostage to traveling on 408 because there's no other options. That ought to be, that's a state project that is part of our strategic intermodal system. I think that we need to look at state funding, and I would look at the Turnpike as one opportunity for funding that. They actually picked up some of the funding cost for the portion that went through my district, District 1. So it ought to be a joint partnership, and there's no reason that the folks that are stuck on 408 because they don't have an option should have to pay for that parkway single-handedly. But that does not mean I'm going to back away one iota from getting the parkway built.
All right, Matthew Falconer.
Well, great. I pledged to repeal the toll increase, and I've said it. I have a big billboard on 408, as your listeners can see out there, and it's in big letters. So I pledged to repeal the toll increase, which I have two reasons for that. One is it is immoral, in my opinion, to put a tax burden on people that are struggling to keep their homes. We have people facing foreclosure. As many as 25% of the residents of this county are in default of their mortgage, and we're raising their tolls. People that live in Pine Hills and go to school in UCF pay as much as $1,000 a year for tolls on 408, and it's unfair. And secondly, that increase was basically to build a state road in another county, State Road 46 in Seminole County. I think it's unfair to have the taxpayers of Orange County pay for a state road in another county. And lastly, you know, with regard to the Beltway, we already have a connection from the west side of town to I-4. It's called the 414. I use it every week, and it gets there. There's hardly anybody on it. I see no reason to spend $3.5 billion in this economy on a Beltway that already exists.
Bill Siegel.
Thank you. Yes, I believe in looking before you leap, and I took a long view at the toll increase. Of course, we as county commissioners had no vote on that. And it came to the conclusion after looking at all the facts that if we did need any increase, it would have been a smaller increase to make sure that our bond covenants were covered. So again, would not have gone for the full 25 cents, but do believe there's some need to make sure we don't violate our bond covenants. As to the way the Expressway Authority has been run, that building was absolutely not needed. That big, beautiful building was
their new headquarters.
That was ridiculous. I do believe in competitive bonding. I think there's a lot of money that we could have saved in that. The Wakiva Parkway is extremely important, and I mentioned many times there's the age-old debate around the country as to whether existing segments of roads should pay for new roads, and good people can disagree on that. There are a number of ways we can fund the Wakiva Parkway, and I support the Wakiva Parkway. Luckily, we've done the PD&E on that. We have done some preliminary land acquisition, so we have a good start on that. Having the Turnpike come in, having a private agency build it, differential tolling. There's lots of great ways that we can look at and debate to get that thing done. So I think it's vitally important that we do it.
We're talking with the candidates for Orange County Mayor on Ballot 2010 and Intersection Special on 90.7 WMFE. I'm Judith Smelser in for Mark Simpson this week. You can hear more election coverage online at WMFE.org/ballot. Let's move to the budget now. The county government is dealing with a $77 million budget shortfall. Things aren't likely to get any better for some time to come. So first, I'd like you to name three specific things you would cut from the budget if you became mayor. And also, are there any departments or programs that you would pledge right now not to cut if you became mayor? Teresa Jacobs, we'll start with you.
Thank you. One of the ways that I made decisions while I was on the commission, I think some people thought I was a very decisive commissioner in that I could make decisions and stick with them. But I don't make them easily, and I don't make them without doing a great deal of research first. And so to answer your question right now is a little difficult because I feel handicapped. There's some information that I would like to have. I will tell you one thing that jumps out at me. In 2006, we did a study and determined that there were some changes that needed to be made in the way the sheriff operates. Now, we're not directly responsible for the sheriff, but we fund the sheriff. And a great deal of our discretionary budget goes to public safety. We did a study, determined that they needed to restructure, have more deputies on the street, less captains in the office. We also found some other changes where they could save money. But we also found out of that study that they needed to have more deputies, more funding than we were currently provided. And we increased our funding over the next couple of years to add, I think it was a total of 50 more deputies patrolling our streets. We have watched, in spite of the recession we're in, we have watched our crime rates decline. And as a result of that, we've also seen our jail population decline. Our jail population has declined 18% over the last 2 years. And yet our personnel and operating costs have only declined by about 5.5% during that same period of time. One of the ways that I would look to balance the budget is to look at examples like that and say, you know, rather the original plan that was rolled out at the beginning of the year for balancing this year's budget was 7.5% across the board. I would take more funding away from the jail operational expenses, the personnel costs, and I would preserve more funding for our sheriff's office because the better job we do keeping our streets safe, the more money we save. And because public safety is job number one. I can't tell you that there's any area that's totally off limits because we have to be able to balance our budget. We're required to do that statutorily and constitutionally. But what I propose doing is comparing every single department in Orange County against other similar counties and private sector operations across the state to see, are we getting the most efficiency out of every tax dollar? And I'll be better prepared to answer that question after we have that analysis back. But I give you that one example because it's the one that I can point to very clearly.
Okay. Matthew Falconer, places you would cut, places you would preserve.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm running against incumbents who increased the budget by $1.3 billion. So they've shown they could expand the budget and not a very good propensity to shrink it. But the first thing I'm going to cut is my own pay. I have pledged to cut my own pay by 10%. And I'm also never, ever going to accept the public pension because I don't think that government officials deserve a better pension than the taxpayers they support. But I came here also to give you a copy of my book called Building a Better Local Government. It's subtitled How to Lower Taxes and Improve Services at the Same Time. I found $1 billion in potential savings every year. So there are ways to eliminate waste in government. Everybody knows there's waste in government. But why do people not take care of that? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to shrink the budget by reducing waste in government. The three things I will not cut are education, public safety, and social services like the PCARE clinics and mental health care clinics. I think, again, it's immoral for government to cut things like PCARE clinics and mental health for the poor and build arenas for billionaires. So really, again, it goes back to a question of priorities. And fortunately for me, I'm running against incumbents who have a track record that people can question why they gave a billionaire a $600 million arena.
Bill Siegel.
Thank you, Judith. We have done enough of these debates where I think each one of us can give each other's answers. So it's rather, it's a lot of fun. I too would never cut public safety. That is the job number one of local government. The state's primary job is education, and ours is public safety. I would not cut deputies or firefighters. There may be some ways that we can affect some savings there, but I would not cut the amount of deputies or firefighters, nor would I cut our social service arena. And Mr. Falconer mentioned our PCAN clinics, and I think those have done a wonderful job for the citizens of Orange County. You asked for three areas that I would look at to cut, and I think one of those would be to perhaps privatize some of our road maintenance. We already do that with our mowing, and I think we could look at privatizing some of that maintenance. I would make sure that our Environmental Protection Division is not duplicating what EPA, DEP, and the Water Management Districts do. We have 90 people there. 30 of them are being funded through pass-throughs, so they're just administering other plans. But I want to make sure that we're just not duplicating what the other agencies do. And at the jail, I think there's some efficiencies that we can do at the jail. Certainly, our jail population is down, and you cannot bring the amount of people there up and down as the jail population goes up and down. But I think there's some efficiencies to be had there.
Well, of course, the other side of the coin here is revenue. Right. And obviously, you can make cuts, but you maybe also have to think about ways to increase revenue. So I'm wondering, are there any circumstances under which you would support tax increases of any kind or revenue increases of any kind? If so, what would those be? What kind of tax increases? And if not, why not? And Matthew Falconer, we are going to start with you.
There you go. I have pledged to not increase any tax, toll, or fee on the residents of Orange County. I firmly believe we are taxed enough already. And it's not because I think that taxes are bad. We need taxes, but at a certain level, taxes become harmful to our economy. Every dollar that the government puts their hand into somebody's pocket and takes a dollar out is a dollar that doesn't go into our small business economy. And I think the depth of our recession is because we've taxed all the disposable income out of consumers. So in order to get our economy back on track, we actually need to lower taxes, not raise them. And the Orange County budget in 1998 was $1.3 billion. And in 2008, it was $3.5 billion. And population went up about 12%. So I think that government kind of got drunk on prosperity, and it's time for it to sober up. So I don't think taxes are the answer. I think efficiency and eliminating waste is really the answer we need in government, and somebody that knows how to get it done.
Bill Siegel?
Judith, I would not increase any taxes or tolls. There are fees, and some of those fees are looked at every 5 years, impact fees, enterprise fees. Some of them may have to go up. Some of them may have to go down. But other than that, I will not increase taxes or tolls. But impact fees or permit fees, again, have to be looked at periodically, and they may go up and they may go down.
Teresa Jacobs?
I would not increase any taxes either. The one concern, and we don't get to talk to each other at these events. We talk usually to the moderator. One concern that I have about one of the options being thrown out is the sales tax holiday for snowbirds. And I know Mr. Falconer says he won't increase taxes and he won't cut public safety, but I don't know if he's run the numbers on how much that proposal, had it been in place in the last 2 years, how much revenue that would have cut out of the county's operating budget, and where he would fill that gap. And that concerns me, because while I don't support higher taxes, we've got to be realistic. If you're going to take my tax dollars and give it to a snowbird, it's coming from someplace. The only other thing that I have mentioned to you is the rental car surtax. By vote of a referendum, the citizens want a transit system that is a choice system, that is something that is more efficient and isn't just for the folks who have no option, then I think that would be a vehicle. But I would only do that through a referendum, and that's really a question of whether the citizens want to increase that tax on tourists that are coming here and renting cars.
Matthew Falconer, do you want to respond
to
that?
Yeah, I have to respond. The tax holiday is not sales tax. It's a real estate tax holiday, and it's meant to bring people back to Orange County. Really, what we have here is a demand problem. We have 10,000 foreclosures every year in Orange County, and we have a glut of housing. I heard a statistic that 28% of all houses in Orange County are vacant. And by getting a sales tax holiday, which I project will cost $10 million a year, we'll get thousands of people to come here, 2,000 people to buy houses, put small contractors back to work, and it may actually increase our tax base because the values of houses are going to go up, and it's also going to create transactions, dock stamps, and things like that. The Florida Association of Realtors said that one transaction of one house creates 27 jobs. That's what we need, is jobs and economy, and that's what my program will do.
Bill Siegel, you want to respond to that?
I just must say I totally disagree with Mr. Falconer on that snowbird tax holiday, et cetera. I don't believe in any of that logic at all.
Okay, and I think we've covered that fairly extensively. So let's move on to the question of ethics. Orange County passed an ethics code in 2008. Some of you were major players in that debate. Wondering if there's anything you would change about the ethics rules that were passed back then. And I'd also like you to address the issue, because one of the things that that ethics code speaks to is conflicts of interest. So I'd like to know who your major campaign contributors are and how you would avoid conflicts of interest if you became mayor. Bill Siegel, we'll start with you.
Certainly. I think we did a great job, and I voted for all of the proposals for ethics that were brought up 2 years ago. I do think we didn't have an enforcement provision, and the legislature just gave that to us, and we acted upon that to start bringing some enforcement. It was a public records exemption law, so we were now allowed to move ahead with enforcement provisions. There were some other items that were brought up here in the last few weeks. We are in a heated mayoral campaign right now. I didn't think it was right to act on them. We have two candidates on the board. Didn't want to politicize it. I believe that after the next mayor is elected, that we should reconstitute our commission with Linda Chapin or whoever cares to serve, and look at what we have done and what we have not done and what we may need to do. Because after a couple of years, faults start to show up. We had a form to fill out. The form by the attorney's office, county attorney's office, was a flawed form. It didn't, by their own admission. So the form was changed. A lot of things will show up that need to be changed after a couple of years, and I think we need a good review after the election so we don't politicize this.
Well, and can you talk, though, about how you personally would avoid conflicts of interest with your major contributors?
You know, this is the old story. As long as politics has gone on in this nation, people say, you give me a contribution so that people get something back in return. And I complimented Commissioner Jacobs a long time ago when, you know, she has really, you know, hit back at one of her major contributors early on. I think every commissioner up there is willing to tell major contributors that, you know, I'm going to vote with you when you're right and vote against you when you're wrong. And I do not believe people giving you political contributions has any effect on anybody, especially when you raise a lot of money. And so if you get $500 from somebody, that amount really starts to diminish in importance. So I don't know of one candidate or one commissioner who has ever been affected by political contributions.
Teresa Jacobs.
Thank you. Let me answer your first question about what I would change. We did, and you will recall, I championed ethics reform and brought out several proposals in 2006. An ethics task force was formed. Linda Chapin chaired it. And they concurred with nearly every one of the recommendations that I made. I also championed campaign finance reform. They were undecided on the legality of that issue, and so that was not part of their recommendations. What came to our board was their recommendations. What got adopted was not their recommendations. Several of the things that I had proposed that they supported did not become a part of our county law. One of them was a Whistleblower Protection Act. I think any good organization has a way of making it safe for their county employees, their private sector employees, to report things, factual things that can be documented, not hearsay, not, you know, rumors and gossip, but if they can bring forward facts, they should be able to do it in an anonymous and safe way. And that, I was very disappointed, did not get put in. That's something that I would seek to change. Also, one of the important things to me was making sure that elected officials disclosed who they were in business with so that citizens would know if conflicts of interest were occurring on their votes. And some language got put in that watered that down significantly. Two very, very large loopholes. It was not part of the recommendation of the task force. I would seek to change that. As far as the impact that financial contributions have, I think that is an individual thing. Unfortunately, can point to situations where it certainly appears that relationships, business relationships, may have impacted approvals. It appears that way. Can't be proven, but it appears that way. And that's why we have ethics laws in the state of Florida that say you cannot vote on things that benefit your business partner. And I think that the burden and it needs to be higher for the mayor, because the mayor controls not just what they vote on, they control whether something even comes to a vote. They control the county staff. They hire and fire the county staff. So I had originally proposed much higher standards on the mayor than the other commissioners, who simply sit there and vote on what's in front of them. Now, I'm going to preempt here for a second Mr. Falconer, who, because as Commissioner Siegel said, we've been doing this so much together, I know what he's likely to say.
Right.
Is that everybody that gives a contribution, that all of us who take contributions are somehow bought and tainted, and that is not the case. I can give you my record of where I've voted against people that have given me contributions, private, individual contributions and company contributions. And I voted against their projects when they weren't complying. And I can also give you examples of where I voted for things for people that didn't give me contributions but gave my opponent contributions. So that is not an absolute statement. However, if that's what Mr. Falconer believes, we need to look at the contributions that he's taken. If he thinks a contribution equals a vote, then he needs to start talking to us about who the people are that are giving him, who those business partners are. It appears that some of his business partners are the people that are giving him contributions. I don't buy it. I think it happens sometimes. It's unfortunate. We have ethics laws. We need strong ones in Orange County, and I want to strengthen them.
Matthew Falconer.
Wow. You know, I didn't expect that. I've never been in an office, so I don't think that I could be corrupted by contributions when I haven't even been in office. But my campaign is largely self-funded because I don't have the special interest money behind me that some of my opponents have. But the reason my campaign slogan is taxpayers first is because for the past 8 years, my opposition has been corrupted by very powerful special interest groups. They all voted to give a billionaire a $600 million arena, and they all voted for basically every major spending program in Central Florida. And the reason is because the special interests want it and the taxpayers pay for it. But, you know, aside from campaign contributions, people get corrupted by the promise or the reward of jobs in after office. And Ms. Jacobs in 2006 proposed a moratorium on post-office employment. But then she took three jobs from entities that benefited financially from her votes. And today she works for an engineering firm that got a $400,000 contract and makes $50,000 a year in part-time jobs. So corruption is not necessarily a campaign contribution to vote on a certain way on a development project. Corruption is serving special interests and sometimes being rewarded by special interests on the other side of things. And that's why I propose the Orange County Taxpayer Protection Amendment. This amendment will require voter approval and a dedicated funding source for all projects over $50 million. So that way, if somebody proposes a football stadium, like Mr. Siegel did for $741 million, it has to go on the ballot, and the taxpayers have to say, that's where our money should go, because the collective wisdom of the taxpayers is far greater than any one person, and that's why I plan to put taxpayers first over special interests.
Teresa Jacobs, do you want to respond?
Please, thank you. You know, there's what people say, and then there are facts. And I would encourage anybody who's listening to your program to get the facts because they need to make an informed decision. Here are the facts. What I proposed, and it is in writing and it's very clear, a one-year ban after a vote in getting into any kind of a business relationship with anyone for whom you cast a favorable vote. That proposal was rejected by the Ethics Commission for this reason. They were concerned that commissioners in their final year of office, we have term limits, in their last year of office, vote on literally thousands of zoning approvals, contracts that would likely force them into unemployment when they left office. They said it was too restrictive. They did not support it, and the Board of County Commissioners did not support it. Having said that, my own proposal, I have abided by over and over again, and here are the facts. The example that Mr. Falconer gives was for the firm that I work for that was awarded a contract in 2008, my last year in office. I did not even vote on the contract. The only contract I ever voted for that firm, was in 2005. I had never met a soul at the firm at the time. It was unanimously approved by the board. It was recommended by the staff, and it expired in 2008 before I left office. And the lies that have been circulated about that have been very disturbing to me personally. They have been hurtful to me and my ability, frankly, to work for a living. But more importantly, they're deceiving the public, and the public deserves to know the truth.
Bill Siegel, would you like to respond to the football
stadium issue? Just one thing. The football stadium, excellent. Mr. Falconer keeps bringing up the football stadium. We did vote, I think, all of us proudly on that commission for the venues because we believe they're economic development tools. We believe this community deserves them. And we fell upon hard times. We have gotten the event center up. The cultural facility downtown is in a tenuous position, and the mayor of the county and city are going to have to work that out at some point. The football stadium was going to be the last and pushed out a long time. What I suggested at one point is we're talking years out, that if a number of things fall into place, that it would be a good augment to the convention center. And among those things that would have to fall into place would have been the securing of perhaps the Jacksonville Jaguars. Again, just a wish list many years out if certain things would happen and fall into place.
In the few minutes that we have left, I'd like to talk about something that perhaps hasn't been so much on the top of your agenda, and that is homelessness. That's becoming more of a problem as the recession continues. The prevailing idea used to be that homelessness was an Orlando problem, a downtown Orlando problem, but recently the county's taken more of an active role in dealing with the issue as part of the Regional Commission on Homelessness, the plan to end homelessness in a decade. But that plan has been severely underfunded to date. So if you're allowed I'm wondering if you would support full funding for the 10-to-end plan, and if not, if that's not possible, how much do you think the county should contribute to the plan in the next year? And Bill Siegel, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Judith. 20 years ago, I sat with a lot of people from the faith community and the secular community and was one of the founders of the Coalition for the Homeless. So I know a lot about homelessness. There are a lot of misconceptions about homelessness, and one of them is I tell my friends that are involved in this, ending homelessness. A great number of people choose that lifestyle. They're mentally ill, they're whatever. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't help them, feed them, clothe them, see that they get medical care. We need a more dispersed, diffuse effort in doing that. We need an East Side drop-in center, which I have been promoting. There are faith-based communities and other organizations that are starting to help. This is not a monolithic problem. This is not a problem that you can oversimplify. Lots of elements to homelessness. But again, I think sometimes saying ending homelessness brings up false expectations. I want to help the homeless in so many ways. I've heard Mr. Falconer mention mental health and social programs. I think we probably all want to do that. But there is no magic bullet to cure homelessness.
Can you put a number on how much the county should give to the project?
The paper tends to want to keep goading us to join into that effort. We already have 3 or 4 homeless shelters in this area. I don't know that we need to create yet another bureaucracy to work on homelessness. That has been the problem over the years. We continue to layer bureaucracy on bureaucracy. I think we need to address it with the existing organizations and perhaps stimulate some of the more faith-based communities to help in that.
Teresa Jacobs?
I totally agree with Commissioner Siegel on this issue. And there are more than one explanation or cause for homelessness, and some of them absolutely are curable. And I'm pleased to see what the Homeless Coalition is working on right now to help people that want to get back to work and back into their own private shelter. They've got some great programs in place, and I think we need to continue to support them. We don't have the money to allocate additional revenues at this point. I think we work within the confines, and we work with the private sector, and we work with the faith-based communities, and we all pull together. And then there are some elements of our homelessness that are quite likely to be here indefinitely. And for those, we are a compassionate society. We're a compassionate community, and we need to provide the best that we can within the resources that we have.
Matthew Falconer.
One of the problems in Orange County with the homeless problem is that Orlando came up with a no camping ordinance, and basically it pushed the homeless problem into Orange County, unincorporated Orange County. There are 180 camps in Orange County with 15,000 people sleeping, and there are many of them in the backyards of residential neighborhoods. So I think Orange County needs to have a no camping ordinance so we can confine the homeless problem to industrial areas. Having said that, the best social program ever invented is a healthy economy. We get the economy back on track, and people will go back to work, and they won't need to be homeless. But I agree with Commissioner Siegel that the private sector and charity has to take the lead role in this because they're far more effective and efficient in dealing with the homeless problem, and they have a compassion for it. I don't think that government is really effective with the homeless position because usually you create a bureaucracy, and the bureaucracy takes up all the money there. So I agree with him on that. We need faith-based and private sector solutions to the homeless problem, but we also need an ordinance that will keep homeless people out of our children's backyards.
Matthew Falconer, Teresa Jacobs, and Bill Siegel are running for mayor of Orange County in the primary election on August 24th. Thank you all so much for joining us on Ballot 2010.
Thank you, Judith.
Thank you.
And again, County Commissioner Linda Stewart was invited to join us, but was unable to be with us today. That's all the time we have for today's debate, but our coverage continues online at WMFE.org/ballot. There you can hear even more from the Orange County Mayor's candidates, including their positions on the county ethics code, campaign finance reform, and the county's role in dealing with homelessness. Next week at this time, we'll hear from the contenders for the new position of Orange County School Board Chair. They'll be taking your questions, so email them to ballot@WMFE.org. Plus, share your thoughts about all the primary races at the Florida Talks blog on the Intersection website, WMFE.org/intersection. While you're there, you can also download our podcast. Intersection is made possible by WMFE listeners and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This has been Ballot 2010, an Intersection special. I'm Judith Smelser in for Mark Simpson this week. Thanks for listening.